everyone. You're listening to It's Disney Time. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Cass.
And welcome back.
Welcome back.
This is your first episode of season 5.
Woo!
When did you come in? Season 3? Yeah, season 3.
I think season 3.
Yeah.
I think I've done like 2 episodes a season at this point. Like, since 3.
This is It's Disney Time, as I said, and this is a podcast that focuses on Disney lore, Disney topics of any kind. Basically, any topic we can think of, we will bring up. And it's usually wrapped around the movies or the TV show or Disney Plus or something about the Disney universe that we feel like discussing. Mm-hmm. In this case, we found a very interesting topic.
Could be interesting.
I think
it could
really
be very boring. We'll see.
There's actually a lot of it. That's the thing. There's a lot of content here.
We could go forever.
So we decided to talk about Disney pop music.
Woo woo.
And we're not talking about like the TV stars in the late, 2000s that became pop stars.
Yeah.
Although that would be an interesting topic. There it is. See? Well, we could talk about that some other time.
There you go.
Like the Miley Cyruses and the Demi Lovatos. But this one is about the greatest pop songs that come out of Disney movies. Because usually every Disney movie has a soundtrack. Mm-hmm. Every Disney movie has that takeaway breakout hit song.
Yeah.
But a lot of the times they take that song and they give it to a pop star to sing.
And then they usually run it in the credits.
Yes, and they run it in the credits later, exactly. I think what started that was back in the 90s, probably like Beauty and the Beast.
Probably somewhere around there.
Yeah, they would have taken like the main song Beauty and the Beast and given it to pop stars.
Yep.
And let them sing it. And then they release it out into the world, and that's the song that ends up on the radio.
Yeah.
Yay!
Yay, and we chose to do from one specific album that's called A Decade of Radio Singles, and it pretty much focuses on like the 90s, so get your 90s hat on.
Yes, yes. So, A Decade of Radio Singles. This is an album that I listened to a lot as a kid.
I never did, shockingly.
Really?
Shockingly.
Really. I think that was the thing, too, is like when you listen to it when you're a kid. I mean, I was a kid in the 90s. These are kind of classic to me. But re-listening to them all so that we could do this episode was a trip. It was like, I was like, these aren't good.
And then as the album went on, I was like, I don't even know what this song is anymore.
Yeah, no, it's very true. A little bit about the album itself. So Disney's Greatest Pop Hits, a decade of Radio Singles. Turns out it's not actually that easy to find. I mean, maybe perhaps only people like me and my family have the CD.
Yeah, I couldn't find it anywhere. I had to find every individual song on YouTube when I was looking for it.
It's not on Spotify. I mean, and it's easy to find the individual songs, but like, yeah, the compilation that came together for this CD, it's not easy to find. I found it on eBay and Amazon, and I found what was written, like eBay had the back of it that was written, like how it described itself. Here's what it says. This novel compilation reveals the famous voices behind the song sung by animated characters in various Disney films. Listen to the tunes included here. One appreciates the cutting-edge pop craft intrinsic to Disney's soundtrack machine. I was like,
oh my gosh.
A copy editor wrote that. The range of artists at work here is impressive. From Elton John, who contributes the best-known song here, and then blah, 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 blah. This compilation will appeal to fans of the artists involved as well as Disney diehards.
Wow. So that was like, really talking it up.
Like, you totally get why my parents bought that for me for Christmas, right? Like, that's like, probably more so for my parents to listen to, honestly. I think my dad still listens to it in the car. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, so this, I listen to this a lot, and what me and you are going to do is we're going to kind of break down every song, every track.
Or at least try to. Some things I don't have a lot to say about, but we'll try.
Okay, so let's start. So what are your overall thoughts?
About the album?
Yeah, because now you've listened to them.
Now I've listened to them all today in YouTube form, in order.
Today? All of them today?
All of them today.
Well, I spread it out. I was like,
no, I did it all today and I regret it. I think it started really strong. And I think as it went on, the songs just got, I guess, less and less popular, sort of. And I guess they also couldn't do like a bunch of them by Elton John. They had to like pick one.
Yeah.
Well, I guess there's two. But
but yeah, that's the thing, is like they did pick two.
They did pick two.
And they picked many from The Lion King. There's more than one Lion King.
Yeah, there's a ton of Lion King.
But I mean, I appreciate. If this came out in like 76 or 77. So that would make sense why Lion King is like number one.
Yeah, and I was shocked, like, as we kept going by the end, I was like, I have literally never heard of this song in my life. Mm-hmm. So
yep.
And they all kind of started to sound, I guess, not the same, but it's all from the, like, 90s, so it all has that, like, 90s feel.
Yeah, it does. And here's the thing about 90s music. I mean, this is, like, when you think of 90s music, I think a lot of people think of, like, Nirvana, mm-hmm. or, like, that grunge
yeah.
kind of sound. Or even, like, the really poppy, like, Britney Spears came out in the 90s kind yeah. of thing. But I think of, like, adult contemporary.
That's what I'm thinking. This is adult contemporary.
Like, yeah. every Disney pop song ends up being for adult contemporary listeners, which yeah. makes sense because it's the most universal. But something about pop contemporary, adult contemporary music in the 90s kind of bugs me. Do you know yeah. what I mean? Like, it's really, like, boring. It must be because it's so smooth.
Yeah, it's really smooth. It's really, like, it's really heavy, and, like, everything tries to be super emotional.
To the point where, like, the melodies and harmonies kind of become cheesy.
Yeah.
It's got a very, like, highly polished sound to it.
Yeah.
It could very easily fall into background music.
Yeah.
Right? Like, oh, yeah. elevator music.
Music.
Yeah, and it's, like, how is it that they all have the same sound?
It is very strange.
And very romantic sounding, too. Very sentimental.
Yeah, like, all of them, like, are trying to make you cry, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Everyone like, in the 90s wanted to cry.
They're trying really hard to make you feel something, and it comes across as inauthentic, and that's why it's cheesy.
Well, so, we're really selling this.
yeah, sorry, everyone. But, like, I mean, they also use a lot of those, of, like, piano, saxophones, like, yeah. an orchestra set. I just think, like, it's not the same as how recent adult contemporary music would be.
And it's not how we think of really pop music now.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, so what we're trying to say here is that adult contemporary music is not our favorite. Therefore, these pop songs tend to annoy us. Like, I wouldn't want to re-listen. The fact that you listened to all of them today.
Yeah, and I never want to listen to it again.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like I spread it out over the week because I just smart. Know I can't spend one entire hour commute doing that. Okay, so let's get into it. So, Disney's greatest pop hits, a decade of radio singles. Everybody, if you want to follow along, go find it on YouTube.
If you want to listen to all the songs on YouTube, don't do it all in one day.
Let's start. Okay, number one was Can You Feel the Love Tonight by Elton John.
The best.
The best. Academy Award winning, sold 11 million copies worldwide. Song was number one hit in Canada and France.
It was number four in the States, which is not too bad. Yeah, and it won the Best Original Song at the Oscars. And then Elton John also won, like, a personal Grammy for Best Male Pop Vocal for this song.
Yeah.
So it went beyond, like, the movie songs. And can you feel the love tonight? I was late.
This is the case here as well.
Oh, see, I prefer this one over the movie version.
Really? Okay, so why?
It's so weird because I've seen Lion King a billion times. I forgot that in the movie it's not actually him singing it. And
serious?
I actually looked up the clip because I was like, is it not him? And I was like, oh no, there's two people singing
it. What are you talking
about?
When Nala and Simba, like, break free and sing?
I know, I forgot. I am going to also say I am like 8.5 months pregnant, so my brain is not what it once was.
That will be your excuse. Can't believe you.
Yeah, most of the time I prefer the movie versions. I think this one, I've just heard the Elton John version so many more times. I'm not sure why.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
did
my
you have
listened to
yes,
it
I was
or
say,
something.
Was it on the radio?
I don't know. Like, maybe it was on the radio a lot.
Yeah.
Or
maybe even to a lot of weddings and they play it.
Maybe.
I don't know.
And I think it's also, like, it's one of those songs that works out of context. Like, you can take it outside of the movie and it still is just, like, a good love song. Like, yes, very 90s influenced, yeah. but, like, a good love song.
That actually is a good point. Like, I can't take it out of the movie, which is why it doesn't apply. Like, probably why a lot of these pop songs don't do it for me when not in a movie setting.
Interesting. Maybe I'm not as big of a Lion King fan as you are. Like, I liked The Lion King.
Yeah.
But I definitely watched The Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast way more times. Mm-hmm. So to me, I think I could separate it easier. And maybe that's why I was like, oh, it's a good bop on its own.
Yeah, like I will say, like it's not that I don't like the song. I do. I just prefer the movie version.
Interesting.
But this Elton John song, like out of the other ones we're going to be mentioning that he sings for that movie, the pop versions, this is the best one.
Yeah.
And that's why it won. Yeah. And it is cheesy in its own way. Like we said, like those 90s adult contemporary, it has everything.
Has it all.
But it is actually beautiful. And you know what? Like, out of all of them, this would make the most sense context-wise outside of the movie. However, like, when I hear it at weddings, I am in the back of my mind being like, oh, yeah, like, great scene. You know what I mean? Like,
I do think I wouldn't. I could never pick it as, like, a wedding song because I would just be like, it's The Lion King.
Which is also why, like, sometimes these pop songs, it's like, this is just so blatantly from a movie.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
As were, like, so many of those songs back then. Like, you know, like, I Don't Want to Close My Eyes or whatever.
Aerosmith.
I Don't Want to Miss a Thing from Armageddon.
From Armageddon.
Like, same idea there, right? Like, I can't. Like, that's always going to be associated to Armageddon to me.
Yeah.
Or even, like, Faith Hill singing, There You'll Be, which is a Pearl Harbor.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, there's a lot of these kind of movies. Like, I mean, Disney's doing the same thing that any other film company would do. Like, get a hit artist and a hit pop song, put it in your movie, boom.
Boom, then it'll be, it'll live on forever.
There, exactly. Track number two was A Whole New World by People Bryson and Ruchi.
Talked about in the soundtracks episode. He's back.
Everyone, watch Soundtrack to My Life, because Kath and I had talked about the greatest soundtracks in Disney last year. We talked a bit about Peebo, just in the sense of who is he and why is he relevant.
And yeah, we were talking about him, I think, with Celine for the Beauty and the Beast. I don't think we brought him up in this context.
No, we didn't. But that's actually a good point.
He got a double whammy.
Where is Beauty and the Beast in this CD?
That is true. It's not here.
It's not here, and that's very strange that it's not.
Maybe because they had to pick between Peebo and... Or, like, they had to pick between Peebos, and they picked this one.
It's silly that they had to pick it all when we get to later in this list, when we see all these, like, junk songs.
That's true.
A question for later. So, A Whole New World, Peebo Bryson, and Regina Bell. What are your thoughts?
I wrote here, it has such an early 90s vibe, it hasn't aged well. And I said, I do like it better than the movie version, again.
Very interesting.
And I don't
once again
know why I said that.
I also like the movie version better.
Shocker.
Kate, and the more I think about it, the more I want to say, like, the movie version's, like, very distinct. Like, I don't know, like, maybe I like having a character connected to the words that they're singing. Like, it
very
makes
possible.
It more real to me. And all of these pop songs and all of these singers low-key have the same kind of sounding voice.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, I feel like it wasn't until later that people with different sounding voices came in.
Yeah, they do all kind of sound the same.
Yeah.
This song, though, it peaked at number one on the Billboard Hot 100 charts in 93, bumping Whitney Houston's I Will Always Love You off the charts.
The hell?
I was like, it is not that good.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Unless, like, I Will Always Love You has been on the charts for, like, years.
I think it was, like, 18 weeks or something. Like, it had been for a long time, but still.
I was like, shut up.
How did this cut it out?
Oh, my God.
I was shocked.
Yeah.
God, I love Whitney.
Stay. I'm gonna put that clip instead of the.
Instead
no,
of this one?
No, that's not fair. This is Disney's pop song episode. But how could it have beat Whitney Houston? I don't know.
It also won Song of the Year in the Grammys that year in '93.
Like
it won the Oscar Best Song, whatever. But it won Song of the Year at the Grammys. This version with the two, with Peebo and
Regina. I mean, it makes
sense.
Like, obviously, they're not going to put, like, the cartoon version in and let it win. I mean, though, I would take it. I would take it over this version because I feel like this version is just, like, emotionless. and yeah. synthetic.
Yeah, it's like it's the faked 90s emotion, like yeah. the strong orchestra.
Like we said before, yeah, yeah. and like the just very, it comes across as just really cheesy and insincere.
Yeah.
But I mean that I guess in the 90s is what people were like eating up. Like we need these, like, have you seen the video for this movie?
Oh, I watched it. Because I was watching sets. Them all on YouTube.
Oh, okay. So the you fake, mean like the sand, the desert.
Oh man!
There's like a there's something in the background. It's not like Agrabah, but there isn't there like a tent.
There's like a tent. It just really looks like it's just like a piece of material that they just had like flapping.
Because they did it on the sound studio, probably.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah.
And also, who is Peebo? Like, who are these people?
I don't know who Regina Bell is either. Yeah.
Like, once again, if we're gonna like say like, is it better or worse? Do you think it's better? I think it's worse.
But by better, I mean like slightly.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay. Number 3, Colors of the Wind by Vanessa Williams. Wow. Have you ever heard the wolf cry to the blue corn moon? Or ask the grinning buckshot why he grins? Can you sing with all the voices of the mountain? Can you paint with all the colors of the wind?
I prefer the pop version to the movie version mm-hmm. so far everywhere, yeah. but not here.
Interesting.
I said her voice is like almost too deep and too serious to get the feeling of the song.
Yeah.
Like the original one, she's like kind of running through the forest and like showing John Smith things and whatever. And
yeah.
Vanessa Williams is taking this way too seriously.
Yeah. I don't know. I like... It doesn't do it for me. Like, I will take the movie version once again.
Yes, this one I will take the movie version.
Okay, but the thing is, like, this version, this one is sounds like the most hokey out of all of them. It sounds the most out of the 90s.
It is very, it's a lot.
Like, even the opening, like that do-do-do-do-do, like, it sounds like it's just, like, screaming, I am 1996, you know what I mean?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but if it doesn't float my boat.
No.
I will skip the song immediately.
Yeah, like, I hated it. I didn't actually listen to it the whole way through. I stopped it, because I was like, nope.
And it's funny because, like, I don't feel like I'm, like, a music connoisseur. I don't feel like I'm a music snob. But now I've realized, listening to these songs and preparing for this episode, that I just don't like 90s adult contemporary pop.
Which is, we weren't adults in the 90s, so.
We weren't. But I want to ask people who were.
I know.
What they were thinking.
If you were an adult in the 90s.
Vanessa Williams has a beautiful voice. She has a beautiful voice, but you're right, I don't think it suits the song.
No, it doesn't. And it doesn't really suit Pocahontas either. Like, Pocahontas is supposed to be, like, what, 15? And Vanessa Williams is, like, a grown-ass woman with, like, a very deep, rich voice that Pocahontas does not have.
And also Judy Kahn sang the Pocahontas movie version. And
yeah.
She's incredible.
She is incredible.
And there's something to be said for when the characters are singing it. Their character is in that, and we know that Pocahontas is singing about, you know, the natural world and, you know, being part of that and respecting nature and all that. And it comes with emotion and something tied to it. Whereas Vanessa Williams is like, here I am, like, singing because
and
I'm
again,
the king queen.
It's and like giant and huge and, like, super emotional.
It's too
like,
much.
Almost Celine Dion heart pounding. Like,
yeah, but no one could do it like Celine.
No,
like,
obviously not.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, this one, out of the three that we've talked about so far, this one's, like, definitely at the bottom
for me. It was also bottom for me. But it also it was a top 10 hit on the Billboard charts, which shocks me.
Because the 90s was hungry for this stuff.
It must have been nothing better.
Nothing at all. Okay, number 4. You've Got a Friend in Me, Randy Newman, featuring Lyle Lovett. So this is a duet.
This is the duet.
You got a friend in me. You got a friend. If you got troubles, I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. If we stick together, we can see it through. Cause you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend.
I like this.
I also like this. But I have a really hard time taking it outside of the Toy Story context.
Yeah.
Like, if it came on the radio, which I've never heard it on the radio, mm-hmm. I would not be like, this is a good song. I would just be like, Toy Story.
Yeah, Toy Story. I mean, that's not a bad thing. What's interesting is that Colors of the Wind won the Academy Award as well.
Yes, but not the Vanessa Williams version.
Maybe it was.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't?
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. So it beat out You've Got a Friend in Me.
It did.
And that's wild.
And You Got a Friend in Me also never charted anywhere on the charts.
Like, so it's just for the movie, I suppose.
Because I think also it doesn't really work as a pop single out in the world because it's pretty boring. If you just think of it, like, outside of Toy Story, if you're just listening to it.
Yeah.
It's pretty boring.
Yeah.
Like,
you're like, what is this?
You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. Like, it's like.
Unless it's the Spanish version.
Yes. I love the Spanish version.
No, you're right. I can, like, and also, like, what's, yeah, like, what category would it fit into? Is it folk?
Because it's not really pop. Like, it's not pop even in the 90s sense of pop, but it's not pop even in our sense of pop now.
I don't know what it is. But this is the thing. If I'm listening to this song comes on. And it doesn't sound any different from the movie version.
Yeah.
But when you're a little bit into it, you hear the duet.
Yeah.
I love the song as a duet.
Oh, yeah.
I think it works so well. You think of Woody and Buzz.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense. So I prefer this version to the original.
Agreed.
One with just Randy Newman.
It's also like not like Randy Newman is a fantastic singer and Lyle Lovett's not either.
But they're just buddies.
It works.
I get the impression of like two... You know, middle-aged men, their wives gaze on the afternoon to hang out together. They both pull out the guitar and they just like write a song together. Like that's how I picture it.
Yeah.
And I really love when it's like, you got troubles. And then the other guy's like, I got them too. Like it's so cute, right?
Yeah, it is
it's such
really
a cute song as a duet.
Yes.
This a bit is of a snoozer song. As it's a
yeah, if you're just school. Listening to it like on the radio, I'd be like, meh.
But in this
But
context,
it makes me think of Toy Story, which makes me happy.
Yeah. Number five. Circle of Life, Elton John. Why? Who decided the order of these? I don't know.
I was also very confused by the order of this. But.
Yeah.
Movie version obviously has like the Zulu parts.
Yes.
I prefer the movie version.
Yeah, thank you.
But Elton John does bring a different kind of emotion to it. Again, if you're taking it outside of the movie and just like into a song.
Yeah.
He does bring like a different kind of emotion to it, if you know what I mean.
Is it just me or does this song seem very strange out of context?
Oh, it totally does.
Like it doesn't belong anywhere.
Because the Circle of Life, you're like, okay.
Okay. Okay. Like, I'm confused. Like, I almost don't know what it's about when it's not about the Lion King.
Well, that's
you know?
What I mean, yeah. If you're just thinking about it, like, in a human context, it's like, there's not really a circle of life. Not really.
Like, we don't eat the
like,
grass
we don't, yeah.
that our fathers become. Like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it
for
doesn't
us.
Really make sense.
Yeah, but he changes all the lyrics, too,
he does.
Right? Like, this is actually something we should bring up because Elton John has the pop versions for Can You Feel the Love Tonight and this song have different lyrics than the movie version.
They do.
Whereas A Whole New World and Colors of the Wind are exactly the same.
Yeah.
So that's why it's easier for me to pick between the two. But Elton John, like, the fact that he changed these pop songs to bring them to the radio bodes well. But I think it's also the fact that Elton John wrote the soundtrack for The Lion King itself.
Yeah, so he probably kind of had that in his mind. Like, we'll do it this way for the movie. And then I can kind of take it and do it. I do have a kind of fun fact about this song.
Yeah.
Tim Rice, who wrote the lyrics and Elton John would write the music. Mm-hmm. He said that Elton John wrote the melody and recorded a demo for Circle of Life in an hour and a half. He handed it to him at 2 and at 3:30 it was done.
So he created like a little piece of pop culture in an hour.
An hour and a half.
What did I do in an hour and a half today?
I listened to this album.
Yeah.
That's what I did.
I did research for this episode. That's wild to me. Also, John's so good, though, honestly. Yes. Like, this is the greatest soundtrack. I talked about that in our soundtrack episode.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't feature it, I talked about it, how it's the best.
Yeah.
This song, like, I think it's a bit of a snooze when it's a pop version.
Yeah, it did weirdly. It charted. It made it to 11, which is not as good as some of the other ones. Yeah. But I do think it's a strange thing out of context. Like, I'm surprised it even made it really to the radio. Yeah. Because
I will give props to Elton John in this case for creating pop songs that at least sound different and have their own vibe than what the movie did. There it is. But overall, like, who wants to hear Circle of Life without the Mas
Avenida? No, like, I know.
No one. Nobody. No one wants to. So, yeah, I would once again pick the movie version over this.
Yeah, agreed.
And then here we go, the cream of the crop. This is the one for me. If I Never Knew You, John Cicada and Shinies. I thought our love would be so beautiful. So beautiful. Somehow we made the whole world right. I thought our love would be so beautiful. We'd turn the darkness into light. And still my heart is saying we were right. We were right. And if I never knew you, I'd have lived my whole life whole. Empty as the sky. Never knowing why. Lost forever. Don't know who the fuck those people are.
No.
But I cannot help it. I really love this.
I love this
song. Okay, good. I love
it. For those who don't know, it's from Pocahontas because it wasn't in the original.
Yeah, it's actually kind of a shocker that this is on here as well. Like, Beauty and the Beast isn't on here, really? But this one is? I'm confused.
So they did originally record it with Judy Kuhn and Mel Gibson singing it. But they cut it for the movie because when they were, like, testing it with kids, when the song came on, kids would, like, start to look around and, like, not pay attention anymore. So they were like, maybe it's a little bit boring.
Because they did go back and redo it.
Yeah, like, it's now, if you're watching Pocahontas now, it's back in. They put it in later.
Yeah, but I mean, it's basically them. So John Smith is in that hut, and he's about to get executed, and Pocahontas' friend gets her in to see him. And in the movie, that's just a very quick scene of her being like, I can't leave you. And he's like, I'll always be with you kind of thing. But originally it was meant to be this song. And I think it was just them singing to each other in a tent. So I get why kids would get bored.
Well, yeah, it's like a love song, and kids are like, meh, love.
Yeah, but like, I love it. I think it's so such a good song. Because I wasn't listening to it nonstop as a kid, the movie version.
Yeah.
I can only say that, like, this is great. This is a good version.
Yeah.
Like, John really and like Shanice, good job. I do like the Mel Gibson version.
So do I, but he's, like, not really a singer.
He's not, but yet that endears me. Like, I also kind of like that he could carry a tune enough to sing a love song.
Yeah.
And good for him. They could have found a different singer for him.
They could have.
And I'm also really attracted to John Smith. So this appeals to me in a lot of ways, you guys.
Spoiler alert, it's still very 90s. Like, if you're going to turn it on right now, listener, you're not going to be like, this is a modern bop. But
just like Vanessa Williams, it also kind of has that, like, R&B, like, side to it, which is so unnecessary to me.
And the fact that, like, they released that Vanessa Williams single first and then released this one, I was like, you should have just skipped it and just done this
one. Gone straight to this one. This one could have just been on all on its own.
Yeah.
This one's an A+. This was the best one so far, for sure. But once again, it could be because we weren't, like, brainwashed with it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm only recently listened to it the last, like, 10 years as opposed to 30.
Yeah. I think I would still put it under Can You Feel the Love Tonight?
No, of course. No, but it's not, like, going to break that glass ceiling.
But it's, like, it was, I kind of forgot about it. And then when I was listening to it, I was like, oh, my God, this song. Oh, my God, I love this song.
Yeah, no, it's really good. Okay, now, next, number 7 on the track list is A Dream is a Wish Your Heart Makes by Linda Ronstadt.
A dream is a wish your heart makes when you're fast asleep. In dreams, you will lose your heart.
The fuck?
You know who Linda Ronstadt is?
No.
I honestly probably couldn't name any of her songs for you, but I know who she is. Like, she was a pretty big singer in like the 80s, 90s, I think.
Okay. My thoughts on this, on the song, was that she didn't do literally anything to make it different.
No, it was literally just, it's like the original was in 1949. This one came out in 95. It's basically just the same song, slightly better quality because it's not the 40s.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. Basically it's just an exact cover.
Yeah, which she just sings it. It's like, dude, like, I get that, like, it, I don't know, it's so hard. It's like, one way you want to, like, just, you know, do the basic cover, easy. But for some reason, like, if you're going to, to me, if you're going to do a cover, like, you want to make it your own and different.
Especially because it's from the, like, 50s, essentially.
I mean, this is,
it's what, like, modern it up a little bit.
This is what years of watching American Idol has taught me. Like, if you're going to take something and do it again, do it better.
Yeah, make it your own. Otherwise, yeah. Why are you singing it?
Or do it different. Like, yeah. Do it a way we've never heard before.
Yeah. It was basically just, like, a copy. And the song is not very exciting to begin with.
No, it's pretty, so, it's a snoozer.
Yeah.
It's actually very forgettable.
It's very forgettable.
As that I Want song?
Yeah.
Okay, next is your fave. Oh, Go the Distance.
Michael freaking Bolton.
Michael Bolton.
My mom loves Michael Bolton. I will put that out there. Sorry,
you
mom.
You said that last time.
Sorry.
Once again, outing your mom.
Like that really long hair business.
I do.
He makes me think of Kenny G. Kenny, like, G. I can't, if I'm picturing Kenny G, I also picture Michael Bolton.
Okay. I listened to this song a lot when I was young. And you know what? Like, I don't mind it. I don't mind it at all. I think I do prefer the movie version.
Yes.
I think it's got more angst. But yes, Michael Bolton is a weird choice, but maybe a very 90s choice. I don't mind it. I don't.
No, it is, like, it is inspiring. His voice kind of works for it because it's so, like, big and whatever.
Yeah.
I just can't stand him. But I do like the original movie version better because it's, like, he's a younger Hercules. It just, yeah, like, kind of makes more sense.
Yeah, and, like, this, but you know what? This song doesn't sound, like, the pop version, doesn't sound as synthetic and as,
no,
90s as the other ones.
No, you know? And it could actually have been, like, a Michael Bolton song.
Yeah, if you for know sure. What
I
mean.
It got to number 24 on the Billboard charts, which, okay, I was like, that's lower than I would have thought, being Michael Bolton at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it lost Best Original Song at the Oscars and the Golden Globes to My Heart Will Go On.
Good. I mean, obviously. Yeah. Nothing's going to beat that.
Nothing's going to beat My Heart Will Go On.
Obviously. By the way, listeners, Titanic is on in the background.
Yeah, we have it on TV. My so favorite movie. I pointed at it.
You know what's interesting? I didn't know when I was doing my research was that Ricky Martin did a cover.
I also read that. And I was going to listen to it, and then I didn't. I forgot and as I well. Regret it.
You know what? Let's listen to it right now.
Because he did the voice of Hercules in the Spanish version of the movie.
Really?
I think is what I read.
Here it is. Día llegaré. No importa la distancia. El rumbo encontraré. Tendré valor, paso a paso iré y persistiré a cualquier distancia. Yo el amor alcanzo. I love it. Oh my god, I love it.
They should have put that on this album.
Oh my god. Okay, now I'm developing a theory that any Disney song you put into Spanish
is better.
Oh
yeah, because you already talked about it. You got a friend in me.
Yeah, that's awesome. That, oh my god, I like that a lot. Okay, yeah, this one's passes for me. Michael Bolton's and Ricky Martin's for sure passes for me.
Ricky Martin, yes.
That should have been on there. Number 9, Hakuna Matata, Jimmy Cliff, and Level M. I was wrong.
Hakuna Matata. What a wonderful phrase. Mm-hmm. Hakuna Matata. Which I was like, I don't know why I haven't heard it. But I found it strange because to me it had more of a Caribbean vibe than an African vibe. And I was like, what are they trying to do here?
What's going on?
Well, I know Jimmy Cliff is Jamaican.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because I also found it to be kind of very reggae sounding. And I was wondering why. So I'm glad that you kind of told me that because I was like, is it weird that they sound the same to me?
Well, it came off of an album called Rhythm of the Pride Lands. Libalem, I think, was the one who was mostly putting that album together, and it was supposed to be just, like, inspired by The Lion King, but then Disney kind of came on board halfway through and was like, you can use these songs.
Duh.
So then it became, like, a collaboration.
Yeah, you know, I really like this version of Hakuna Matata.
Oh, yeah, it's good.
Because I don't think you could, like, Elton John couldn't take Hakuna Matata and make it a pop song.
No, he could not.
But, like, to do it this way, where it's got, like, that awesome, like, chill vibe, like, do-do-do-do-do,
yeah.
Like, it's actually, like, really fun to listen to.
And it could, you can kind of take it outside of the movie again,
yeah,
and listen to it, and yeah, it's still like,
it's just like a chill song,
makes a lot
like,
of sense. Yeah, yeah, it's like a cool reggae song.
Yeah, I like it. I do. I think it's got a good vibe, and I like that it also changes the lyrics.
Yeah, I also read, though I didn't look at the lyrics to compare. Apparently, they also give Timon a little bit more of a backstory.
Yeah. No, when I listened to this as a kid, I didn't actually like it. But now that we're listening to it as an adult, I really enjoy it.
Because you were just used to those 90s.
I've been listening to
adult Secure. Contemporary.
I like, this is a nice, like, drift away. All right, number 10. So This Is Love, James Ingram.
So This Is Love. So this is love. So this is what makes life divine. I'm all aglow. And now I know the key to all heaven is mine.
Now, I remember one of our first episodes we recorded together. This was not it.
This was before I was
this
part of it.
This was before you were part of it, but you were an active listener.
I was.
And you messaged me and you said that your favorite Disney love song is So This Is Love.
Yes, and I was very excited to listen to this because I had never heard it before.
Uh-huh.
And I was so disappointed.
Oh, I know. It does not live up.
No, it does not.
It's so boring.
Yeah, I said, I mention this song all the time, so clearly I love it, but I find this is putting me to sleep.
Yes, it's so
and the
boring.
Saxophone solo in the middle, or whatever instrument it was,
so
what
corny.
Just made it drag on.
And also, like, just, like, it's too much.
Yeah, also at this point of my listening, it was kind of like live taking notes. I said, I'm kind of getting over these 90s songs.
That's the point. By song 10, you're like, all right,
I'm
starting to hit a wall
this.
Here. Yeah, because it's just a lot of the same kind of songs. Like, that's why the Hakuna Matata popping up in there, I'm like, thank you for the break.
Yeah.
And that's also why, like, even though, you know, it's not the greatest of songs, You've Got a Friend in Me also sounds different.
Yeah.
And even the Michael Bolton version. Like, we're getting out of the same, like, the same sounding songs.
I couldn't find why they recorded this song. Like, I couldn't figure out, like, what it was for, because I do know that it came out on a 2007 a Disney Fairy Tale Weddings album. Like, they're really pushing this as, like, a wedding song.
Yeah.
Which, whatever. But this was recorded, like, in the 90s sometimes, so I couldn't figure out why they recorded it.
See, this is the thing, is, like, when you actually think about the rest of, like, from now on, it almost seems like all the songs take a huge plummet.
They do. Like, from this point on, you're like, what is happening?
Well, it's very confusing, and it's almost like, did you guys, like, run out of money, and then you just ask these random artists to come in and do a quick cover for you?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Because the first ones, as much as, like, we're saying they're annoying, they're quality.
Yeah, they're good. Like,
they make
good.
Sense.
Yeah.
To be, like, the greatest decade of radio single pop Disney music.
Yeah.
This is not the greatest.
No, it's terrible.
Who would ever say that this should be on this list? It doesn't make any sense.
No, I would 100% just listen to the Cinderella version.
And, like, moving on to the next one, like, number 11, Never Alone, Eeyore's Lullaby by Tyler Collins.
Yeah.
Who? What?
And her name is, like, Lisa Tyler Collins, which is confusing. Like, at first I was expecting it to be a dude.
Me
but
too,
no,
me too,
it's a
yeah.
girl.
Lay your head down to bed and let your slumber sweep your cares away.
I don't know what that song is. I said, I've never heard the song before. I have no attachment to it.
What's it from? I mean, obviously it's from...
It was on an album just about, like, 100 Acre Woods songs.
So who would listen? Who would ever say, like, wow, this is a classic?
And also the fact that it's a lullaby also makes it a strange choice because, like, lullabies are about going to sleep. Like, you would never play this on the radio because you would put everyone to sleep.
And I'm also telling you, like, the 100 Acre Woods has a good song called the 100 Acre Woods.
Yes.
And you could just literally get fucking Randy Newman out there, grab his guitar, and pluck that on the guitar, yeah, you know? It would have made more sense than this. I don't understand this.
Yeah, it's... especially because there's no real context to it and it's not a great song on its own. I was like, what happened? What is happening here?
And honestly, even the next one, which I remember listening to this one a lot, was Remember the Magic by Brian McKnight, number 12.
Yes.
This is also one where I'm like, where did this come from? What did they use this for?
Remember the night. Remember the feeling. Remember the magic in our lives. My eyes to a new world revealing. So remember the magic. Just remember the magic. One more
this,
time.
I found information on this one.
Okay.
The song Remember the Magic was played from 1996 to 2001 with the parade in the parks. Like, the parade at Disney World was called Remember the Magic, okay. And they wrote the song for it.
Yeah.
And then in 97, they had Brian McKnight record it because it was Disney's 25th anniversary.
Okay.
So that was why the song existed.
Okay. But, like, Remember the Magic, okay, I like that you just described that because I was going to say, actually, to me, it sounds like a very quick song someone throws together for an event. And I say that because it reminds me of some of the Olympic songs that they put together.
Yes.
For the Olympics. There's always, like, an epic song.
Yeah, like, I like the Canadian one.
For, I believe.
I'm obsessed with that one still. But
I had a friend, I have a friend, Ian, and he... Love that. It was his favorite song. And the one in the, what were those Olympics, like 2010?
Yeah.
To the, like, I think at the end of this, literally, New Year's was last week. He messaged me and said, like, this was the song of the decade. what's her name, the girl? She's a Canadian jazz singer.
I know, what was her name?
Oh, shit. But she sang I Believe, and it was like, I believe in the power
I liked that song for a while.
It was really good, but that's the thing. It was also, like, probably quickly thrown together.
Nicki Minajski.
Yes. song of this decade. But what's funny about that is that that song and any Olympic song, something that's rushed for something.
It is kind of Olympic-y. So, and if it was just to be in a parade at the parks, like, they probably didn't expect it to go on for however many years it went on.
Yeah.
So they probably, like, someone just wrote it. They were like, this is cute. And then they tried to, like, make it a thing.
And that's the thing. So number 13, which is Kubi,
I think.
By Lebo M, another Lion King Rhythm of the Pride's land song. Not as good as the other ones, but yet I welcome addition.
No, I do appreciate that this one sounded more, it gave, because again, it was Lebo M, had a more African vibe than the Akuma Tata. I was like, okay, at least we're in the right continent. Stumbling and falling, having to get up and move on, but it is very metaphorical. Very metaphorical.
Yeah. It does give, I think it gives me a good vibe, but I forget it. Like, I don't even know how to pronounce it. Like, I just, it's I not, it's also shouldn't be on there, honestly.
No, I said this is not something that would ever chart or be a single in North America, but I said, but it is, like, it's a bop.
Sure.
It's different from anything else we've heard.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like, what are you doing on here?
Yeah.
What are you doing here?
They're really scrambling for, I don't know why they just didn't make it a shorter album.
Yeah, like, that's the thing is, like, I don't even want to talk about these ones. And then there's two more here. Streets of Gold, number 14, by Ruth Pointer. I'm going to say that this one's great because I really like Oliver and Company.
Is it the version from Oliver and Company?
It is. Okay. And that doesn't make any sense. Like, why? Why? It's supposed to be the pop version.
Fever Street.
album. I honestly thought that Billy Joel wrote the music to the whole Oliver and Company album, which is not the case.
No, no, he just sang.
He just sang that one song.
And this is the thing. So, like, Ruth Pointer sings this song, but the voice of the dog was Cheryl Lee Ralph that sang it. So maybe they think it's a pop version because they, like, didn't use the person's voice and it wasn't supposed to be in the movie. And they threw it in. Like, I don't know.
But they should have put, if they were going to pull anyone from this movie, they should have just put Why Should I Worry in there.
For real. And, like, Billy Joel do it.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I don't get it. It's who put this together? I'm confused. Yeah.
I did appreciate, though, that this song was from 88 and not 90, so it had a little bit more of, like, a disco-y vibe. At least the vibe changed.
Yes, you're right.
I was not like, wanting to cry.
And actually, can I just say that is a very excellent point. Oliver and Company is from the 80s, and this is supposed to be a decade of radio singles.
I think she released it, I think... Her, like, the Ruth Pointer lady released it in the 90s.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good save. I would also say that, like, it could be decade being, like, if this came out in 98.
I think it came out in 98, and I think this was released in 88.
Ooh, you guys are sneaky.
They are sneaky.
And they just missed Phil Collins. If only they had waited, like, an extra, year or two, right? Okay, the last one, and certainly the least.
The weirdest.
Someday, Donna Summer, What the Fuck.
There will come a time when love will rule all mankind.
I'm not gonna lie, I listened to the first couple, and I turned it off. I didn't
It's from the Mouse House Remix album.
What is that?
They took a whole bunch of Disney songs and made them like EDM house music from the 90s.
Which we all asked for.
Yes, totally. When I started listening to it, I was expecting it to be a remix of Someday My Prince Will Come and not the song from The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Okay, yeah.
So
yeah.
I was very thrown off at the beginning.
Yes.
It is very disco-y, so if you like disco...
I tend to. I like disco,
it's
sure.
A mix of disco and EDM. It's just, it didn't really feel like it belonged on this album.
What is it doing here?
Yeah, it's the furthest away from any of the original Disney recordings. Like, it's a completely different song.
Yeah.
And Donna Summer, like, I don't get it.
Okay, so it's very true. Like, the caliber of songs over the decade, like, decreased over time.
It did.
Or... the CD sucks.
I think I would place it, like, I did sort of rank them.
Okay, let's see it.
But, and I did put this one higher than a lot of the other ones, only because it was different, and I was like, oh my god, it's something new.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can go through and rank them. Obviously, Michael Bolton's on the bottom, but that's just my bias.
Shocking, yeah.
So I have Can You Feel the Love Tonight is the first one. If I Never Knew You was second.
Ooh.
Circle of Life was third.
Okay.
Hakuna Matata was fourth. Uh-huh. I really like the Lion King songs.
Yeah.
A Whole New World was fifth. Then it was You've Got a Friend in Me. And I think it's only that I put it under The Whole New World again because it was like hard to be a single on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But I do really like it. And then I put the Donna Summer Someday song because I was like, not the 90s. This is so much more fun. And then it's sort of all of the like slogs. Streets of Gold, Remember the Magic. I did put Kubi or Kube in there. So This Is Love, A Dream Is Wish Your Heart Makes. Then I put Colors of the Wind because I didn't like it at all.
Yeah,
because
it's so overdone.
Never Alone because I still have no idea what that is.
What the hell, yeah.
And then at the bottom I have Michael Bolton.
Okay. I mean, fair enough. No, I would agree with a lot of that ranking. I just think it blows my mind that this album misses so many songs.
I know, it could have
or limits
so much
itself
better.
To, like, the decade, what it could have done better. I went into Amazon and read some of the reviews. Some of them are really funny. Like, one guy literally was, like, so full of himself and was like, this is not how I would compile. So I took, like, the three songs from it and made my own MP3 playlist. And if anyone
thanks,
wants
dude.
It, here's my email and I'll give it to you. I was like, oh my god. Them. Yeah, seriously. Can I have that playlist now? That was, like, from 2013.
Do you still have that list laying around?
Yeah, that's really funny. I just feel like... it's fine. Even as a child, like, I remember only listening to the first half and then stopping.
It's just strange. And, like, they knew this came out in, what, 98?
Yeah.
Tarzan was coming or was already around. Like, they should have just waited.
Yeah.
For some Phil Collins. That would have helped a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it does show, like, kind of, like, how starting in the 90s, like, they started taking these pop songs or taking these songs from the movies and making them into pop songs. And that's a thing that happens to this day. Obviously, like, Moana, like, they had Alicia, what's-her-face, sing How Far I'll Go.
Yeah.
They had Demi Lovato sing a version of Let It Go.
Yeah.
Like, it still happens.
It does still happen.
But, like, do you ever like those versions? It depends.
Some of them?
It really depends.
It really depends.
If you watch Frozen 2, which I know you haven't yet, Panic at the Disco does a version of Into the Unknown that they always play in the last credits, right?
Yeah.
And I love it.
I love Panic at the Disco. I have a weird, like, love relationship for them.
Yeah, like, I really, really like it. And they're always heavily auto-tuned.
Yeah.
And they're, like, strange versions. And almost sometimes when you get to the end of the movie, it's like, mate, why don't you just play what the movie played? But then I wonder if they give you the pop version because it's not dragging you back into the story.
Yeah.
It's just giving you a little piece to take home with.
And then also they can, like, we could play it on the radio and try and make money off of it that way.
Exactly. okay, well, I mean, from what I got from our conversation is we tend to enjoy the pop stars that are involved with the process.
Yes.
Elton John, I'm thinking of Randy Newman. Yeah. Phil Collins, I'm sure if he had made the list, would have been on there. it's more hokey when it's like these like overdone adult contemporary pop stars that come in and just use their voices to appeal to the masses. Don't like as much.
Yeah, it would have been interesting to see like this album, like their version 2, which was like 98 to 2008 or whatever. It would have been interesting to see if it got better.
Yeah,
or
if they just waited 2 more years. But like clearly this album needed to be made.
Clearly.
And they had to throw in a bunch of trash to make it happen. It could have been 8 singles, honestly.
Yeah, and they could have stopped there. And it, I guess back then, because of CD prices and whatever, you always had to get like CD 12 prices. To 15 songs on an
CDs
album.
CDs could be really expensive depending. They could be. Like, if they're, like, the 2 disc.
I'm sure these ones were, just because they were Disney.
It was, yeah. Like, I think, like, what is an average CD be? Like, $25?
Probably.
Something like that. I don't know. I don't remember anymore.
I don't remember.
I just download it. okay, well, I mean, I liked this conversation. It's funny how, like these are the classic pop songs, yet they don't do it for me, you know? We'll have to do another decade. We'll have to do, like a 2010 decade, you know? That'd be fun.
Or like the past 10 years or whatever.
I also think we should do an episode about giving a pop song, a contemporary pop song to a Disney princess.
Oh, that would be so cool.
Right? Like what, like let's say like, I don't know, like Selena Gomez's new song, I Gotta Lose You to Love Me or whatever. That song. I don't know. I think it'd be interesting to put it to like.
That could be something.
Think about it. We'll think about it.
We'll have to think about it.
Yeah. Most of the babies here. All right. Well, this was, we have a couple episodes about pop music, so this is the first one. This is our volume 1.
Volume 1.
Thanks for listening, everyone. I've been Stephanie.
And I've been Cass.
Goodbye. Disney.